Welcome to another edition of Center Circle Podcast. Marty Thompson alongside Arvin Bedakian this week.
Yeah, so you might have noticed the music was a little different this time around.
A little different.
That's just because in an effort to deliver the highest quality podcast we can to our loyal audience, you know, we like to do our research. We listen to, you know, Joe Rogan, H3H3, but a show that caught our eye this weekend was Between Two Ferns by Zach Galifianakis. And while we haven't binge-watched every single episode, we did get pretty close, didn't we, Marty?
Yeah, and I would like to mention that you are sitting in a recording studio, and you are between two plants.
Yeah, there are two plants, which we've been told are good for sound nullification. Are they ferns? Are these ferns?
That one definitely looks like a fern, but I don't think it is.
We're trying to replicate whatever aesthetic Zach Galifianakis, the comedian, has in his YouTube show. But, I mean, this is as close as I think we're going to get without, you know, copyright infringement, so that's good.
Well, it's funny that we start a podcast on such a soft and somber note when there's so much going on, especially in the CPL.
Yeah, we just didn't want to overwhelm you with excitement, you know? we got to temper expectations here.
Center Circle Live, always tempering expectations.
Lovely.
But we have to start with Cavalry Impact in the Canadian Championship semifinal. The Impact walking away from that one at Stade Saputo with a 2-1 advantage going into the second leg in Calgary.
Yeah, but it's one of those weird ones where a loss almost feels like a win for Cavalry because of that crucial away goal. It's a weird situation because, you know, normally when you lose 2-1, it's like, yikes. But the fact that Cavalry took an away goal out of Stade Saputo, a well-placed goal, I should say, by Sergio Camargo, who did really well to both find the space and then finish the way he did. But yeah, that... You bring that back to Spruce Meadows, you're, you know, a 1-0 win away from taking the series, and that is a huge onus on Montreal to not take their foot off the pedal. And then the other thing that they spoke about after the game, which is, I think, a fair point, is Tommy Wilding Jr. said, our pitch is not Stade Saputo. You know, the ball is slower here. The grass isn't the best. While there are some, you know, negatives that come with that, I think generally what Tommy Wilding Jr. would prefer is a little bit more control, especially in midfield, and a slower field offers you that. It also prevents Montreal from being able to counterattack quickly, which is how guys like Ignacio Piatti and their new signings, Borjan Krkić, Balu Tabla, if they figure into this match, that's kind of their style of play. It's that kind of fast build-up, fast counterattacking style of play. So, I mean, if you're looking at it from Cavalry's perspective, they're still in this fight. That's exactly what they said. They're still in the fight, and it's true. They have a really good opportunity here.
Before that 69th-minute goal there by Camargo, it really did look tricky for Cavalry. Shout-out to Malanga on that assist. I thought that was a great pass, and yeah, Camargo finished it well. And then what happened afterwards with Nick Ledgerwood getting sent off, not a great omen, I guess, going into the second leg there.
Yeah, but, you know, down to 10 men, and the fact is this is the first time I think I've ever really seen Cavalry in this competition anyways not look like they were in control. So the fact that they were still resilient enough, as James Grossi points out in his column this week, the fact that that resilience is there is a huge testament to the quality of this team. And to all the teams in the CPL, really, who have proven themselves, I think, to be resilient above any other real character trait. I think the fact that they've exceeded expectations, because let's be real, nobody was expecting Cavalry to be in the semifinals of the Canadian Championship in their first year. And the fact that they're taking this battle to Montreal the same way that they did with Vancouver, with, you know, a little bit different scoreline off the first leg. But the fact that they're still here is fascinating to watch, especially as, if you know, if you're a neutral Canadian soccer supporter tuning into the CPL for the first time and you're seeing that, that's a huge plus.
So heading into the second leg, a 1-0 win would do it on away goals, and then, you know, taking the tie on aggregate. What do you think of Cavalry's chances there?
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think 1-0.
1-0, yeah.
I think so. I think it'll be a pretty close affair. But I genuinely think that that away goal is exactly what Montreal didn't want to concede. And I also don't think that with all the changes that have come into that squad, who knows who plays, who doesn't really play. I mean, you have to imagine that, like, the advantage is in Calvary's corner. I mean, like, Montreal didn't look particularly good against York 9 and haven't looked particularly convincing in MLS. They came off like a 6-3 loss in league play. And while, you know, they've bounced back in good fashion at times during the season, it's not like this is the same Montreal Impact that was challenging for the Cup 2-3 years ago. So there's opportunity here. And I genuinely think a 1-0 win by Cavalry isn't you know, impossible.
Second leg in Calgary on Wednesday, and that's 9:30 kickoff Eastern time and 7:30 Mountain. Let's talk about Forge now.
Yeah. On a whole other front.
Yeah. 0-0 in Guatemala against Antigua GFC, and they have advanced in CONCACAF League.
Yeah, it's insane. It's like beyond comprehension that like all of this is happening in the first year. There's so many narratives that I think you and I probably thought we weren't going to be covering in the first year, including success at the CONCACAF stage. It just seemed like so early, so soon. But, you know, Calgary's...
This is such a hard thing to predict. Like, yeah. You're all... surely not like a team that, you know, and you...
It's not impossible. It's not impossible. It's not like we were saying it was never going to happen. I just think that the fact that everything is happening in the first year has been just remarkable.
Well, and you see some of the things written like in the Americas especially. Everyone's mentioning, oh yeah, this team's only been around for 4 months. It's a 4 month old team. And you sit there and you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah. It feels like these guys have been around like for our entire soccer fandom in a weird way, you know?
Yeah.
Because the thing is, there's so many of these players are familiar to us. So seeing them playing together has been very strange in the sense that like it feels like a very weird crossover episode of like 10 different TV shows. But it's not. It's like it's its own thing now. It stands as its own entity. And, you know, Cavalry's representing the CPL on the Canadian Championship front, which is amazing. And the intra-league competition is really fascinating to watch. But Forge doing this against Antigua GFC and then now taking on CD Olympia, that's a whole other level. I mean, this is where it gets really hard for those MLS teams, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, Olympia is not going to be easy. And I truthfully think that it might be too tall an order for Forge. I know, like, you know, we're Forge supporters here on this podcast, as is the merit of being a CPL podcast, but I just think Olympia has like so much quality that it's going to take a gargantuan effort to even get it. It will require some luck, I think, which is probably fair for me to say, because Olympia is not a CONCACAF League side. This is a CONCACAF Champions League outfit. This is a team that competes for this trophy. So it's going to take an effort. It's something that is very early, and I almost wonder if Bobby Smyrniotis' side is maybe looking at the fall table and seeing Edmonton and Cavalry at the top and maybe looking at themselves and saying, have we bitten off a little bit more than we can chew at this point? Mm-hmm. But that being said, I mean, they also have a very deep squad. So it's this balancing act. It's a very strange one, but I think it's an interesting one for sure.
We'll talk to David Edgar about this later, but going down for that second leg, kind of just like a classic execution of a second leg. Like they needed to keep a clean sheet, a away goal would be nice. And yeah, there was a stalemate. Their first scoreless draw in the entire season.
Yeah,
and yeah, it just seemed like it was like a game plan that just went perfect for them. Although there was a few, you know, tricky spots, especially in the first half. I thought they handled it well.
But that's the kind of the expectation in CONCACAF, is it's never going to go easy. It's not going to go smooth. And while the narrative around, you know, it's an intimidating stadium, and I get that, and there's a lot of, you know, stories that you hear, but I think a lot of that is a little bit of like fantasy. There's some fairy tale elements to it. It's still a hard place to go play. I mean, mm-hmm. just from the environment, the atmosphere, it's not an easy place to go down and play. And the fact that Forge did it in a very professional way, I know we've talked about the school of Jose Mourinho management, but like that's kind of what it was. It's just like a nice little park the bus effort. Like if we score, we score, but we don't have any onus to. And credit to Forge, they just got the job done. They didn't have to do anything more than what they did. And another credit, we were tweeted about this, so we might as well mention it. We've been pronouncing the name of Forge's eventual goal-scoring, you know, series-deciding winner incorrectly. So we've been told that it's David Schwanier.
Schwanier, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So credit to David Schwanier for scoring the game-winning goal, the series-deciding goal, as well as the goal that he and his agent really wanted to score. I think at the top of the season he said, you know, I'd like to join the CPL because it gives me an opportunity to demonstrate myself at an international level in this kind of a competition. That's exactly what happened. So credit to him. And if we said it wrong again, I'm sorry. It's as good as it's going to get. Really.
I apologize for being just
purely anglophones.
Well, you mentioned Jose Mourinho there, Armin, and I think it's about time we switch gears to Valor FC and Rob Gale.
Yeah.
Another manager who gets kind of the Jose Mourinho treatment, maybe from you or from other people.
Well, I definitely asked him about it after the game. We were at York 9 for this match.
Valor ending their 11-game winless streak, 2-0. Yeah,
with a nice 2-0 win that Jimmy Brennan said was really just a 1-0 win with a gift little goal at the end. Nathan Ingham went up for the corner and Patrasso punished it. But still, 2-0 is 2-0. It's a win is a win. And Rob Gale gets a W in the column for the first time in a long time. But I think we called it an 11-match winless streak. I think he's looking at it differently. He's looking at it as, like, you know, four draws and a couple results here and there that probably could have gone his way with differentiating circumstances. And, yeah, that's fair. But I think the big narrative, the big talking point, was the fact that there are narratives and talking points and that apparently Rob Gale's not listening or reading to any of them. He's no longer on social media, as he clarified. And I asked him about, you know, we've talked about it on the podcast a couple times now, but I asked him, I'm like, Rob, like, in the school of Jose Mourinho, you take that media pressure, the negativity or whatever, and you use that to motivate your boys. Is that something that you've done? And he goes, nope, not at all. Didn't read it. Didn't even look at it.
Everybody's writing us off. Yeah. Well, we played a clip on this very show about him saying, sharp in the guillotine. I don't know how to do his accent, something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows, really? I think he's probably a very relieved manager now. But the thing is, you can't just look at it as a single game. You've won a game. Great. And clearly there's some things that are working. I think Michele Paolucci coming into that starting lineup has been a great acquisition for them. Exactly the kind of striker that I think they needed.
Jose Galan's been fantastic
in midfield. I think Bellon Goyer continues to be a very strong midfield pivot. And then you got guys like Patrasso and Bustos in good form. So how do you take this and then translate that into continued success? The other big piece was the new acquisition, Johan Leburis, fantastic center back, I think, did a really good job in his debut.
And was signed like 2 days before or something. Yeah.
So there are, I think we've always known that there's talent at Valor. It's just a matter of how do you get them over that line. A lot of injuries have prevented Valor from playing to their best. And now that everyone's back and healthy, I think the fact that they've stopped an in-form York 9 is a good starting point for continued success. And it's up to Rob Gale now to change that narrative into something positive.
And spare a thought for Matthias Janssens as well. Penalty save and then that rebound save as well, jumping up and just kind of swatting it with his arm, it looked
amazing.
Like.
Just incredible. It was the second penalty save of the day. Christian Oxnard over at HFX Wanderers got the first of the day. And I guess we can start talking about that game too, because that was another fascinating encounter where Cavalry finally stopped in their tracks in league play. A 0-0 draw, the first time they've been held off from scoring since like end of June, I think June 22nd, something like that. So it's a really strong result for HFX, exactly the kind of thing that continues to dominate Wanderers ground as a sort of fortress, which mm-hmm. I think is fair to say.
Yeah, definitely. And Oxner's saves, you know, behind the kitchen in the first half, people were going nuts for it. Local guy, obviously.
But the big storyline is Peter Schala, I think, right?
Yeah, it's Peter Schala.
So he's coming back to Cape Breton University, which, you know, is kind of a beautiful thing. The fact that he can go back to school, he's played professionally, he's worn the captain's armband. He doesn't look like a U Sports player at all. He mm-hmm. looks the part of a professional. And you have to imagine Stephen Hart's probably looking at that like, yo, we need this guy back.
Yeah, apparently.
I don't know if he'd say yo, actually. But
well, they already are in discussions with him to bring him back next season. But yeah, it will be interesting to see HFX without Schala, because I think he's played in all but one game in the league.
Yeah, almost every single minute.
Yeah. Switching finally to FC Edmonton and Pacific FC, the other game on the weekend. We got to talk about Easton Ungaro. Beaston Ungaro, as Armin called him on the weekend.
I think I might have seen it on Twitter. I'm not going to take credit for it. Yeah, he's been in fine form, a 6'6" striker, and he's really figured his way into that starting lineup such that Jeff Paulus has now got another kind of dilemma to contend with. We spoke about Ungaro last week, the family legacy that he's got in the city of Edmonton. But truly, I think it's not just the name. It's not just hype. He's living up to it. 4 goals in something like 10 appearances, not all of them as a starter.
Yeah, 4 goals in 3 games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a really interesting kind of storyline to see emerge as a local talent with so much history within the city is now emerging as a hero, essentially, mm-hmm. for Edmonton. And they already look so tall, and adding him into the starting line. Like, I remember looking at the Pacific versus Edmonton, like, national anthems, and just the height difference between Edmonton and Pacific was just like It was like men versus boys almost.
Well, that was something with Pacific's back line, because I think they played like Baldissimo back there, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. And so then Ongaro, yeah, is and that was something that they mentioned post game. They saw that opportunity.
Oh yeah.
And like, if we can just get the right balls in, we can knock them down.
But it's got to be a credit to Jeff Paulus, who's looking at that as an opportunity. And then, you know, the CPL was built on the idea that we're going to give young Canadian players a chance. Here's another one. Just another one. Like another, like, young Canadian that nobody really knew anything about. Well, was drafted by Cavalry, but was told that, you know, there's a lot of strikers and you know, the opportunities might be slim. So he said, can I go to Edmonton? We know, I think it was an amicable kind of agreement, and Edmonton has benefited for it. But, I mean, you have to imagine that Tommy Wilde Jr. is probably looking at that like, ooh, maybe there was a chance there for us that we might have missed. Like,
yeah. And now Edmonton joined top of the table.
Yeah, and that's going to be a fascinating post-second leg encounter. It's going to be an interesting week for Albertan soccer. Between Cavalry hosting the Impact and then an El Clasico on Friday, there's a lot on the line for both of these teams. And if you're Paulus, you're probably looking at that Friday game as a good opportunity for you to take basically a six-point kind of lead, in the sense that, you know, it is one of those ones where not only do you gain 3 points with a win, but you prevent Cavalry from taking 3 points as well. So he's probably circled that as a pretty crucial matchup. And we're joined by David Edgar, the latest signing from Forge FC, Canadian international defender, who immediately after signing with the team basically had to fly down to Guatemala. David, thank you very much for joining us today.
No problem. My pleasure, guys.
So, like we just mentioned, you signed for Forge FC, and then right away you're on a plane. You're down to Guatemala to take on Antigua GFC and CONCACAF League action. What's been the last couple weeks like for you? How's this experience been for you?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it so far. It's a great little setup we've got there in Hamilton. It's something I've kept a keen eye on, obviously, since it was announced. The league. And I've been watching it when I've got the chance to. I know a lot of players in the league. And obviously, being a proud Canadian and part of the national team, it's something that's the country's been crying out for. And to see the reception it's got has been fantastic. So from that aspect, it's all been positive. And from a team aspect here, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I get to know the guys. And we've got some great quality and some good people around, too.
So let's talk a little bit about that Antigua game. You were on the bench for it. I mean, I'm sure you guys got to watch it as it unfolded into a 0-0, a positive result for your team, however, off the back of the 2-1 win at Tim Hortons Field. What was the atmosphere like? What was the mood like in the team before the game? And what was that experience like to play club football at this level again?
Well, I was in Hamilton. And for the home leg, and I was thoroughly impressed with Hamilton. Obviously, we watched videos. We didn't see as much as we could because they had just started their season. But I think in the first 15, 20 minutes, we almost gave them a bit too much respect in that home leg, and then realized, well, we're good enough here. And I think we played them off the park after that. Obviously, going down to a CONCACAF nation for some of these players is new, very new. Something that the likes of Kyle Becker and I have done many times with Canada, so it's something I was used to. And it wasn't the most hostile environment that you're going to face in CONCACAF that, by any means, but obviously Antigua brought 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 fans or whatever it was, and they made themselves heard. And we got a nice reception after the game. It's probably the first time in my career a CONCACAF fan base has clapped us off the pitch. So the boys will have to take heart in that, and obviously put in a fantastic performance and grinding it out, and probably not playing the best football, but finding a way to get the result was the most important thing. And for myself, on a personal note, getting back playing professional football after a couple months out, it was fantastic. And I just love being back on the field and being part of a group, and the celebrations in the change room afterwards were it just makes you miss it. So,
well, we're happy to see you back. We're happy to see you join Forge FC. I'm curious, there was some talk in the early parts of the CPL's inaugural campaign that you were one of the players that were rumored to be joining the league. Ultimately, you decided to join Forge in the summer transfer window, but were you flirting with the idea of joining the CPL earlier in the season? And maybe you can take me through some of those initial conversations?
Yeah, I was. I felt in some way I had some unfinished business in England. I wanted to get myself over there. I had an opportunity to go to Sunderland on trial. It didn't quite work out there for one reason or another. And I ended up staying and wanted to see out the season there. So I played for Hartlepool, my dad's old team, and back in the Northeast there. So I did that. And obviously when I came back, I've got a family, a young family. My eldest is going into grade one. She loves her school. My wife's from Kitchener. All our family's here. So it was time to sort of make a decision for the family. And when the opportunity arose, and obviously, like I say, I kept a keen eye on the league and been impressed with the quality and the professionalism. So when the opportunity arose, I definitely had a look at it, and we discussed as a family, and I went and saw what Hamilton were doing there and spoke to a few guys on the team, and I'm very happy with my decision.
As someone who's from Kitchener, Ontario, I know Forge is like potentially the closest club that we have in the region at the moment, but did that play a certain role in your decision to join Forge as the CPL team you eventually decided to sign for?
Because of location?
Yep.
Yes, yeah, it did. It definitely did. As I say, my eldest is going into grade one, and I wanted some sort of stability. We've moved quite a bit in her 6 years. So I wanted some stability for the family, and as I say, it works out perfect. I'm just currently on Highway 6 here, hopping across the 401, so it's not a bad drive at all.
That's brilliant. I'm curious about, you know, beyond the familiarity of the region, was there something about Forge FC, like, do you have any relationship with Bobby Smyrniotis at all, or what's been your impression of the team and of your new coach?
I've been very, very impressed with the level of professionalism, the detail, the tactical knowledge of the coaching staff, and getting that fed through to the players and young players who are, some of them are in their first time being in a professional environment. So I've been very impressed with that. And I spoke to Kyle Becker, and a lot of these boys knew Bobby. I personally didn't. I obviously knew of him. I spoke to a few people and heard very good things, and as I say, I'm happy with my decision, and they were right.
Brilliant. And then I think the overarching theme for some of our Canadian internationals who have joined this league has been, you know, in wanting to help build the sport in this country, and there's a certain element of, you know, personal sacrifice where, you know, there you might have had other options, let's say in England, but you come back for the idea of helping build this young league and build something for the future generation. So I'm curious as to how big a role did the idea of legacy play in your decision to join the CPL?
Yeah, massive. It's no secret that my passion for Canadian soccer and wanting to help build the game. I've been involved with the national team for the best part of 12 years, and obviously in the younger age groups. And every time I get the opportunity to play or be called up, it's an honor. And to see the talent we have across this country now have a platform and an opportunity to move on to the national team level and have our national team program be able to select from Canadian players is huge for the country. And to be a part of history definitely played a major role in my decision.
And lastly, just I know you've been you know, kind of new to the CPL, but in the last couple of weeks between Forge playing Antigua GFC and Cavalry taking on and defeating your former club, the Whitecaps, it's been a kind of a special week for these kinds of competitions. What's been your impression of the league in general in terms of the level of play, the quality that you've seen, and what's been sort of some takeaways?
Yeah, it's been a great time to actually join the league and be involved in a piece of history down in Guatemala. And then obviously Cavalry beating Vancouver and putting up a good fight against Montreal. It's like you say, it's been pretty special for the league, and people are talking about it more and more. And it's like I say, it's a good time to get involved, and happy, delighted with my decision, and really excited for things to come here. And hopefully we can continue to make history here at Forge in the next round of the CONCACAF.
Brilliant. Well, David, best of luck to you and to the team as you guys take on CD Olympia, a team from Honduras, in the next round of CONCACAF League action. And best of luck in your CPL adventure.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
That was Marty. David Edgar from Forge FC, who I think you kind of perked up when he said something about driving on Highway 6, 401 or something.
Oh, yeah, the Highway 6 through Hamilton. Yeah, it's tricky because it kind of ends and you have to get on the 401 and then just to turn back on Highway 6.
That's right,
yeah, it's got this weird, yeah. Not a fan of that drive. Not a fan of it. But, I mean, it's – and I'm glad that you brought that up, Armin, talking about him growing up in Kitchener because it's just down the road. Like, it made a lot of sense. Yeah. It made a lot of sense.
A lot of people know David Edgar from his time at Newcastle United in the Premier League, which makes sense. But I think the fact that, you know, he's played for Ottawa Fury, he's played for Vancouver Whitecaps, he's played all over England, he's a well-traveled player and that's why I kind of wanted to know about the idea of, you know, legacy, because a lot of our Canadian internationals, Nick Ledgerwood, Issei Nakajima Farron, they've all spoken about this idea of coming back and giving back. And David Edgar is just the latest example. I also think, you know, he's also probably the nearest, like, to a national team return. I think if he puts in a good, solid showing, he's one of John Herdman's kind of regulars back in the day anyway, so...
Yeah, there was talk that he was maybe on the bubble for the Gold Cup squad. Yeah. I think we mentioned that last week.
So I'll be interested to see if a good run in the Forge back line where, you know, they needed a player like him, I think a good run could really open up a possibility of a Nations League call-up too for Canada.
Yeah, and those squads will be coming up soon because I think the first games are like the start of September, right, at BMO Field against Cuba.
Yeah, so that's going to be a fascinating one. The U.S. game is another really big one, so that's one that I'm really looking forward to.
That's for another podcast. We've got lots of time to talk about.
Do we have any questions for this week, Mark?
Yeah, we've got questions. Okay, question one.
Okay.
If you're Peter Schala, do you go back to school?
Oh, okay. So
or if you were in that situation.
So just for context, HFX defender Peter Schala, we've talked about it earlier in this episode, but he's returning to Cape Breton University as per the CPLU Sports Agreement. That's a good question, Marty.
He's got a year left of a business degree.
So,
there.
For example, Emmanuel Zambassis from York 9 has opted to remain with the team, and he's gotten a couple games here and there. Jimmy Brennan's been really happy with him. He said it's a kind of a project. They've worked on him.
And he hasn't played nearly as much as Schala has.
Yeah, so that's my question. I guess it depends on how much you've, like, what your really kind of career ambitions are. Like, if I was in Schala's shoes, I'd be pursuing...
Schala's shoes. Sorry, yeah. That's just a fun...
Sounds like a nursery rhyme or something. If I was in his shoes, I think I would probably have stayed just because you're in good form. You're playing a lot. You're playing for a professional soccer club. You're, you know, traveling the country. You're really experiencing what it's like to be a professional soccer player. But then again, like, I think he's in his fourth year, so he's just got one more year of school left anyway, so you might as well get it out of the way. I think the thing with Schala's decision is that he's probably assured a spot in the HFX back line if he chooses to return. So might as well get your degree and set yourself up for further success after your playing days too.
Well, I was just going to say that I think the one thing that people are missing between Zambassis and Schala is that, you know, Schala has performed, like, you know, they gave him a painting.
Yeah.
You know, and then they did the Viking clap for him. Like, he knows that opportunity is there, or if it's not, that other clubs will have seen that.
Oh, for sure.
But if you're Zambassis, who hasn't played as much, you're kind of saying, okay, well, if I go back, maybe that opportunity won't be there again.
Yeah, right? So it's an interesting one. But that being said, I also think Zambassis is a very familiar player to the York Lions kind of organization and to York 9. So because the crossover there is pretty, it's the same stadium. So for the most part, I think Peter Schala is probably a little more comfortable. If I was in his shoes, I probably would stay just because, you know, I already have a journalism degree. So, no, I'm just kidding. I would probably go back to school for one more year.
Yeah.
And then just finish up and then I'll be a professional soccer player.
Okay.
Oh, if only.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, question two. How many more goals does Easton Ngaro score this season? So he's at four.
He's at four.
And right now, Taron Campbell and Tristan Borges are tied for seventh in the Golden Boot race. I think that he could score like 10 more goals.
Yeah. My mind immediately went to 10.
And the only reason why I'm saying
like
that
14
is
overall.
Because they're in such good form.
What number is on the back of Easton Garo's jersey? 19?
I think it's 19. 19? Yeah. 19.
Let's say 19 goals.
19 goals total or 19 goals more?
He's got 15 more.
Okay, okay, okay. Yeah, yeah, okay.
I think realistically, you know, I think it's possible that he hits double digits. It depends on if he becomes a starter. He's emerging as one. So, you know, it's hard to stop a 6'6" striker who can actually score. Mm-hmm. So there is an element of the physical advantage that you get coupled with Edmonton's hot form. It's not unreasonable to assume that he will challenge Diouk and Tomiyami Obi for the top scorer's prize within his own club. So, Marty, do we have a third question, or can I ask you a third question instead?
Yeah, I'll scratch this one out. You.
Right. You give I feel me like one. It's so one-sided. I'm always getting interrogated here. Yeah.
It's a roast.
If you're Pacific FC head coach Michael Silberbauer,
yeah.
Speaking of in-form hot strikers, you've got Taron Campbell, who's got 7. Mm-hmm. You've got Marcus Haber coming back. You've got Victor Blasco and Ben Fisk, who can play out wide. And as Martin Bauman points out at campale.ca, you're left with 2 midfield spots for 5 potential starters. Mm-hmm. Who do you start in that midfield 2? Assuming that he starts all 4 of them up top.
Well, starts all 4 up top.
Yeah, so we're talking Blasco, Fisk, Blasco and Fisk as wingers.
Yeah.
4-4-2 with advanced wingers.
I think those have to be locked in.
Yeah, and then you got Haber and Taron Campbell up top in a 4-4-2.
Yeah.
So who are your 2 midfielders?
See, I really like Baldissimo.
Okay.
I think that he's also good because he's like a little bit more of like a two-way presence there. And then after that, it's...
Do you play Noah Verhoeven? Do you play Zach Verhoeven?
Probably Noah Verhoeven. And then, yeah, I think you're kind of like locked in. Alexander
Gonzalez has been good as a defensive midfielder.
Yeah, I was just going to say that because we mentioned him on the summer transfers roundup at campale.ca, and he has put up like incredible numbers in terms of like retaining possession.
Oh yeah.
But for some reason I like Baldissimo more than him, but I'm not entirely sure.
Or do you do the unthinkable and you bench Haber and use him as a super sub? Because right now...
Yeah. So I'm really thinking of Pacific FC in the same way that I think of FC Edmonton now, with Amiobi, Ongaro, and then Diouk as like an attacking kind of like wide midfielder that will just push
up. That's like Fisk and Blasco.
Yeah. But then, okay, but you can't have both of those players do that because then all of a sudden there's like a little bit more of an imbalance, right? Unless you would have like a Gonzalez and a Baldissimo and a Verhoeven, right?
Can we change this to like 12v12? Like,
can we add another player? I'm just saying that the balance, right? You know.
I think this is a good headache for Silberbauer to have. Pacific FC has kind of battled injuries for a long time, but the fact that they now have an abundance of options, both up top and in midfield, bodes well for a team that I think started off kind of thin in their ranks and has now got a lot of options. So
yeah, Marcel Dionne might come back.
Yeah, Dionne's on his way back. He looks like he's back in some semblance of full training, or at least getting back to that point. So it'll be I'll be curious to see once Marcus Haber is kind of introduced back into the lineup what that kind of shape looks like, because out of all the teams, I think Pacific FC's is the most like is the biggest question mark at this point. Especially as they kind of balance through the fall season.
Maybe we'll see on Saturday when Pacific heads out to York Lions Stadium to take on York 9. Valor's hosting Forge in the weekend as well. And then that El Clasico Cavalry Edmonton, which is preceded by Cavalry's big Canadian Championship game on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting week of soccer all across the country, in Alberta in particular. And I'm really looking forward to seeing, Cavalry versus potentially Toronto FC in the final. That's all I'm going to say.
I was just going to say, well, maybe we'll have an Alberta special.
That would be
next
amazing.
Week. You want to do Alberta special?
Hell yeah.
Okay, we're cooking steaks next week.
Nice.